Today on Piano Jazz, we step back in time to reflect on one of the most significant and talked about periods in Marion McPartland's career. For 6 years during the 1950s, Marion McPartland, Bill Crow, and Joe Morello were the Hickory House Trio, a trendy modern jazz group performing nightly at the prominent Hickory House Steakhouse in New York City. In the fall of 1990, the trio had a reunion to tape this Piano Jazz episode, which was originally broadcast in February of 1991. Now, here's Marion McPartland having a great time reminiscing and making music with her old buddies.
You know, I haven't seen you for an age. And of course, after we worked at the Hickory House, which maybe not everybody knows, this was in the 50s. God.
We were the last jazz on 52nd Street after Ryan's moved.
I think so.
Yeah.
But of course, you and Joe both went on to such great things in various groups and with various people. Didn't you go right off to the Hickory House and join Jerry Mulligan? Wasn't that what you did?
Yes, that was when he had an opening in his sextet, and the lure of his arranging and Bob Brookmeyer on trombone was irresistible. Oh, we had Zoot then, too. Zoot Sims and John Eardley, and the drummer was Dave Bailey.
I heard the group many times, and it was wonderful. Joe, of course, we know where you went. You went with Dave Brubeck.
No, after I left your group, that Tommy Dorsey thing was coming up, and then a Benny Goodman thing, and Benny hated me, incidentally, because I didn't want to rehearse with his band. But then I did go with Dave, yeah.
Well, now, how long did that last? I forget. It seemed like it went on forever.
12 and a half years.
My goodness, you can't keep a steady job.
That's always been my problem.
You know, we could go on forever talking about the Hickory House and different things we did, but I think we probably should play something, shouldn't we?
Well, we've got the instruments here. We might as well.
We might as well. Joe, what about the tune you wanted to do? I'm beginning to see the light.
Sure.
Is that good?
Sure. Would you like me to...
You count it off, or you start it.
Okay.
Okay?
You all set?
Yep.
Here we go. Thank you.
I always like to start the night off with a drum solo.
That's the way you start them all, Marion.
Well, I'll tell you, since I last saw you, you've got a new drum book out, and Bill has a book out. But Joe, tell me about your book. What's that called?
Modern Drummer is publishing it, and they called it Master Studies. I think it's a bit presumptuous, but that was their idea. I'm proud to say that it's being used in all the major music schools, and it's a workbook that you can apply to any technique that you play. It'll help you if you work on it. I'd like to think it would, anyway, and I've got excellent results with it so far. Very.
In other words, it's for your serious drummer.
Yeah, it is. It's not a like 50 hot bebop licks. Or 50, you know. There's enough of those things out. I don't even know 50 hot bebop licks.
Oh, yes, you do. And then
about
some.
12.
Well, Bill, your book is not for serious.
No,
readers,
I don't
really?
Think there's a serious bone in his body.
It's a very funny book.
He's not a very serious guy, though.
It's called Jazz Anecdotes. Oxford University Press published it, and that's your publisher also, right?
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And it was a project of Sheldon Myers. Oxford has done a bunch of anecdote books from all different venues. They have one from literature and opera and the military and that sort of thing. So they were looking around for somebody to do an anecdote book from the jazz world, and I happen to have been doing that sort of a column for the local 802 Union newspaper.
I know, I've been reading that thing for years.
So somebody steered Sheldon to me, and we made a deal, and I had a wonderful time putting this book together.
No, it's a great book, and I recognize, I won't say I recognize some of the anecdotes, but I've certainly heard some of those things that you talk about in there. And now I hear you're going to write a second book.
Well, I kept all my own personal stories out of this one because I had so much stuff from everybody else, hoping that I might be able to convince Sheldon that I had another book in me. And we just agreed that I'm going to do another one now. So about a year from now, that should be ready.
You're going to have to lay off some of our Hickory House stories so that there's something left for me if I ever put anything down.
Well, you put a few in your book, I remember.
Yeah, I guess I did a couple, but went thinking of things like Joe coming late and saying the train blew up, stuff like that, you know.
Wait till I write my book. I've got one coming out, too. Everybody's right. I'm going to write
Everybody's got a book.
Oh, I'm sure you have a book in you somewhere, definitely.
Oh, you better believe it.
I just don't know if it's, I'm not sure if it's printable, though.
No.
That's the only thing. Well, listen, let's do another tune. How about Love You Madly, Duke Ellington's tune?
Sure.
amazing, just the way we did it in the 50s. It reminds me of Lil Armstrong saying to Lovie Austin, they got together after about 35 years or so, and Lil says, well, how will we play that tune? And Lovie says, well, just the way we always did.
I guess that's the fingers what, remember if they had
We even got that. That drum break and then the bass break.
I know. It's funny. Like, some things maybe I did last week, I don't remember at all, but those things.
This group's got potential, I think.
I think so. Listen, we just need a showcase, that's all. You know, I keep thinking about all the people that used to come in the club and sit in there in the Hickory House. Your friend, Sal Salvador, was the one that always came in. Most of all, I think. In fact, he's probably the reason that you played with my trio in the first place, because...
I'm glad you brought that up, Marion, because he's responsible, actually, for me, and I want to give him... I don't know, I should thank him a lot, because he... he and Phil Woods came down from Springfield to New York much earlier than I did, and they kept saying, you got to come down, and I was scared to death. I figured all these... great drummers in New York City and everything. And so this one time I quit a job. I was working with a real commercial group in Hagerstown, Maryland. And I just got up one day and I said, well, I'm going to just go and try it for 1 year. And it's funny because Sal had told me about you. And he said, you got to meet this Marion McPartland. And I'll be very truthful. At the time, I wasn't familiar.
Who's that?
You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. And... when I came down the first night, he was in town. He was with Kenton, and he took me around. And one of the first places he took me was your place, and then we went to Birdland, and that's how it all really started. So, Sal, if you're listening out there, I was scared to death, but it worked out okay, I guess.
No, but there were so many other people. That, in fact, Oscar Peterson came in one night, sat in. You were there then, weren't you?
Sure.
Both of you?
Yes, that was a nice opportunity to play with Oscar.
Sure.
And of course, what I really liked was having Billy Strayhorn come in and sit at the bar.
Yeah, and Duke used to come and eat dinner there all the time. I think you must have worked on him for about a year before you finally got him to come up and play with us.
That's right.
Oh, really? I didn't know it took that long, but I remember when he got up there, what he did play, and it was something I'd never heard, and I asked him what it was, and he said, it's called Night Creature. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
I thought he was putting me on. I didn't think he actually had a piece that he was working on called Night Creature. But anyway, in case you're wondering what's going on here with all this chatting and laughing, I'm Marion McPartland. My two guests here are Bill Crow on bass and Joe Morello on drums, and this is Piano Jazz. Joe, did you bring the ratchet?
No, I couldn't find one. It's somewhere buried in the...
When I think of what you used to do, when I would get up onto the bandstand, up those three steps...
Mm-hmm. That was kind of crazy.
And you would turn the ratchet.
Or when Julius would walk...
I would get up on the bandstand, he would turn the ratchet. And go,
make it sound like her knees were very old.
Yeah, like my knees were gone.
It would be like...
Well, it's funny, when we first came to work there, when I first joined the group, the only light on the bandstand was a little soft floodlight that they had over the piano shining down on Marion's head. Mm. And we were in the middle of a huge oval bar with piles of whiskey bottles on both ends and the bartenders running around at our feet. And Marion would complain that there was more light out in the room than there was on the bandstand. It was very hard for us to attract the attention of the audience sometimes. So we finally got John Popkin, the owner, to turn the brightest lights off as soon as the dinner hour was over and the music began. But it was still very bright in there. So one night when he was away, Marion gave me enough money to go buy some lights, and I built a little switch system.
Oh, that was wonderful. That was a wonderful improvement.
Yeah, and I had it worked out so that I could catch the switches with my foot. So when we did fours, the light would, in time, switch from Joe to me or Marion to Joe or whatever. But one night I crept around and turned out all the lights in the room except the wall sconces and the fireplace in back was had a big fire where the hickory steaks were cooked. And it had the effect of lowering this huge ceiling. It must have been a 40-foot ceiling in that club, and made it look very intimate, and the focal point was the bandstand. It was very nice. It looked like a nightclub for a change.
It's funny, I remember that, and how disappointed I was when Mr. Popkin came back and turned all the lights on.
Yes, he came running in and said, "Who put out the lights? People will think we're closed."
In fact, he had this huge cabinet with steaks and pieces of meat in it, and
it was lit better than we were.
It was. In fact, I said to him rather vulgarly, "Why don't you turn that light out and put some lights on the other meat?" And he wasn't too amused. Well, let's have a go at another tune.
Great.
Before you do that, you know, I want to get something clear. I mean, you've been telling me about this, me being late all the time, and that only happened once. Why does everyone laugh when I say that? Let me just make myself perfectly clear.
Make this perfectly clear.
What happened, if I'm elected? No, but what happened is this. I was living in Jersey at the time, which I still am living in Jersey, and I used to take the train over, and this one night, the train actually got stuck in the tunnel. This is true. These things do happen. They're machines.
Oh,
stop
sure.
laughing, Crow. So what happened is we used to do a remote from there, a little radio broadcast, and I remember getting just in time, and I jumped in a cab, and I said, "Get me, blah, blah." We went there, and you just started your theme song, and I ran up on the stairs. But that's what really happened. But Marion never forgave me for that.
What you said, though, that the train blew up.
Well,
that was your excuse. The train blew up, and then you described how the hot coals flew out of the engine.
It was just a small bomb. It was nothing, really.
But, you know, in those days, I was so concerned if the rhythm section wasn't there to start. I really wasn't together with playing solo piano except on a slow tune. I mean, I still may not be, but at least I can go out and do it if the bass player and drummer don't show up. You know, I'll just go ahead and play anyway.
Should we leave now?
I think you can stay.
It's our cue, Bill. You heard it now.
Well, Bill, something you showed me. I used to play this tune called "I Hear Music," and you had this nice little—I don't know what you call it—putting the tune in another place. That the tune goes. You had it go.
Did I do that?
You did that. No, you did that. It was nice because then the melody is on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I thought it was sort of hip.
Shall we do it?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, here we go. Like one, two, one. Thank you. ending.
I didn't.
35 years later. But no, I thought that was a nice little thing, and I still think so. I was just thinking of the time, Joe, when we were doing the Kate Smith show. Talk about him being late. This is another occasion.
Oh, my goodness. Of
him being late. And I had these funny vibes that he just wasn't going to show up at all for this TV show Kate Smith had.
Oh, boy.
And I went up to his house on the Upper West Side.
Pounding on the door.
And
open up the door, Richard.
And I just hear these sort of slow, dragging footsteps coming to the door. Oh, Joe stuck his head out. You know, I said, we're doing the TV show. What did I say? I forget exactly. I
can't repeat what you said, but you said, I don't know, something like, you better hurry up and get down. You ran off, and I remember dressing in the cab on the way down. I just threw a shirt on and a pair of trousers and a jacket, and I was racing through Central Park, and we got there, and you didn't talk to me for a few minutes, but it worked out okay.
It's funny. My vibes were right that day because I don't think he was going to make it. I think he was probably going to stay in the house and raid that woman's icebox, Celeste.
Oh, yeah, what I used to do.
You used to go there and you'd drink orange juice and put water in the...
That's right. I'd do the same thing with the milk, you know. I couldn't afford much. The next morning, you know, I'd drink this milk I was staying in this lady in this apartment. And so I'd go home at night and I didn't have that much bread. This is before I even joined your group. And so I'd take the milk and I'd drink it and I'd replace it with water. So the next morning, there'd be like half a bottle of water. The milk would set. It was really kind of interesting. But those are the old days.
Why, I can't imagine you doing a thing like that, really, though.
Well, I must admit.
I can imagine it.
You can. See. You know.
Like Bill probably did it.
You know, you were, I don't know, I think you were there, Bill, at the Hickory House when we created an imaginary drummer.
Marvin Bonessa.
All these drummers would come in and Joe would be telling them about Marvin Bonessa. Were you there then?
I remember. I think you had done that before I joined, but I helped perpetuate the myth.
Well, you know, we actually perpetuated that thing to such an extent that we had Marvin Bonessa's name in the downbeat.
And in Playboy
drum
also?
Poll.
He got a couple of votes. And,
yeah.
Several. I think I sent in about 10.
You want to know what's funny about this? When I was at the quartet with Brubeck, Charlie Bourgeois was, you know, we went on these George Wein team tours all the time in Europe and everything. So we started talking about, and I told Brubeck about this Bonessa thing. And so I was sitting on a plane with Charlie and I said, well, this Marvin Bonessa, I said, he's great, you know, I went through my whole thing, and he said, well, where is he? Where can we find him? I said, somewhere in the Midwest. I said, he's kind of a strange guy. And he actually believed it, and he went researching Marvin Bonessa. And he told me, you know, he'd come back, and he'd say, well, I haven't found him. But he really thought it was, you know, I don't think to this day he knows it was a pun on him.
That's funny, because if you could fool Charlie Bourgeois for something like that,
This is true.
I'll have to ask him when I see him.
I don't know if he recalls, but he actually wanted him. I said, well, the guy is really weird. He just doesn't believe in recorded music. I said, he walks in and can wipe anybody out. And I wanted, you know, the whole routine we had.
Well, in case anybody's wondering, I'm Marion McPartland. My two guests here are Bill Crow on bass and Joe Morello on drums, and this is Piano Jazz. Well, back to us. Let's do one of our recorded hits, our capital recorded hits. I think this was another of the tunes that you suggested, Bill. You know, you were really good at that. You came up with more tunes that I hadn't played or didn't know, and we learned them on the job. I think this one's by Duke Ellington, Everything But You.
Yes.
Isn't that a Duke tune?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's have at it. Thank you. know, while you were playing your fours and things, Joe, I was, mm-hmm. remember that one he used to do, Bill, he would really hang me up every time.
He used to play two against three.
And I would call it the chicken or something.
Well, it's very, very, very simple. In fact, I'll even play it.
No, but we'll play it. I'm like, wait a minute, let's see. But you know, I used to feel so badly about that.
No, it's just a very simple thing.
Well, we'll do it again. It's funny. I get off on the wrong foot. I try to go one, you know, but when I do, then it's never is one.
What happened is that night, this one night, the first time, I think, I don't know, I never thought about it. I just played this silly thing, and you said to me, play it again, and I did it again, and we went around about four times. And
I never did get it
we
right.
We were walking back to the Walt Whitman Hotel, and you weren't really talking too much, and you said, I suppose you stay up all night thinking these things. And you said a few other choice things, which I'd rather not go into. But
I always felt humiliated by that.
No,
I mean, I still sort of do, not as badly, but I used to really feel that's something I ought to be able to do. And every time I missed it, I was chagrined.
No, chagrined.
Yeah, so... Well, let's see what else you can do to hang us up. What else can we do? Let's do a waltz.
Simple.
How about we could play Emily?
Sure.
Maybe I'll do an ad lib part and take it into the lead everybody in with an indecisive intro.
Maybe okay. You can hang us up.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, that felt nice.
Yeah, it sure did.
Love that tune.
Yeah, Johnny Mandel.
Very good.
I don't know what to say because, of course, naturally, you, both of you sound better than ever. Let's get a gig.
Well, we've been practicing. Yeah, let's get a bus and go on the road. Now we have to get the gold bug and go on. Remember that old car you had?
Oh, the car, the Hudson.
Step down.
Oh, my God, the gold bug. Isn't that... Oh, as a matter of fact, I meant to bring you a picture. I'll have to send it to you, of all of us standing outside that car the day we bought it. And I have another picture of you with Ben Dickinson playing golf.
Yeah.
Boy, if I start bringing out those old pictures, we're all going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I got pictures of Jimmy. He needed somebody to play golf with when he came on the road with us on some of those jobs. So he decided, well, first he decided that since I'd been driving the car so much, he should give me a little present. So he gave me his old golf clubs, which meant, of course, he had to go out and buy a new set. And then he took me out and showed me his system for getting wonderful golf courses to play when you're out of town. He would look around the club the first night and spot people who looked like doctors. And then he'd go chat them up a little bit and find out which ones belonged to good country clubs. And we would end up with an invitation the next morning to come out and play.
He was really good at that. It always worked, too. I mean, those country clubs were great.
Oh, well, gorgeous.
Ben Dickinson was... he was somebody that took you and Jimmy out a lot.
Yeah.
Well, in case anybody's wondering what's going on here, my guests, two guests today, Bill Crow on bass and Joe Morello on drums. I'm Marion McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz. Well, here we are at the end of the, we're getting close to the end of the hour, believe it or not, and we'll just have to open up a bar and do some more reminiscing.
Yeah, well, it's really nice to play with you again.
Yes,
it's been
you too,
long.
Bill.
It sure has been great. Really, a lot
so
of fun.
Let's wind up with something. We haven't done any blues. And Joe, I know when you put a group together, you like to play this Mercer Ellington thing, Things Ain't What They Used to Be.
Sure.
So... So what if we do that?
Thank you.
Being merciful and coming, bringing us back in, Joe. So it all worked out. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
It was really a pleasure. Certainly enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and her guests Joe Morello and Bill Crow, who together with Marian made up the original Hickory House Trio. Join us each week at this time for conversation and improvisation with Marian and her guest. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer of this episode was Sherry Hutchinson. Recording engineer, Andrew Milano. Mastering engineer, Bill Sexton. Executive producer, Bill Hay. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. To learn more about the artists and music on Piano Jazz, visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. There you can find a link to our free weekly preview podcast or listen to a recently aired program. Support for this episode of Piano Jazz was provided by Fazioli Pianos, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR. Additional support was provided by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. Support for the original production of this program was provided by a grant from Exxon Corporation. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and NPR contributors, which include the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org. This is NPR.